This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to In the Limelight, Vanity Fair's entertainment and pop culture podcast. I'm Josh Duboff, Vanity Fair's senior writer, and I'm here with Julie Miller, Vanity Fair's senior Hollywood writer.
On In the Limelight, we analyze the ins and outs of pop culture, entertainment, and celebrity from the past week, from the Kardashians to Kate Middleton and everything in between.
On this week's episode, we will discuss last night's dramatic Big Little Lies finale, and Julie had a very special interview last week with two of the leading ladies from the show. And I want to hear all about that.
We'll also hear about Josh's party run-in with Anne Hathaway, which he didn't even tell me about, which, like, I love that this doesn't even register. Like, a meeting with an Oscar winner, no big deal.
I know, I thought of it this morning. Like, oh, I should mention Anne Hathaway. I was like, I can't believe I forgot that.
We'll also update you guys on the latest plot twist in the William ski trip scandal. But first, okay, so Big Little Lies. Josh, how did you watch last night?
I wish I had, like, dressed in Audrey Hepburn, the full Breakfast at Tiffany's getup, and had, like, 18 people over for an Audrey and Elvis party in my apartment with, like, Avenue Q puppets, like, face paint or something. But unfortunately, I had none of that. Though I was really thinking that, like, my next birthday party, I used to do these great themed birthday parties when I was younger, like a Gossip Girl one. I did a Miley Cyrus party in the USA one. Like, I used to be known for my thematic pop culture birthday parties.
Wait, Gossip Girl, what did that entail?
The show was, like, thriving. It was, like, in the heyday of the show. So you had to dress just as any character from the show. So I dressed as Chuck, I think. I mean, all the girls came as Blair Waldorf. And I just wore, like, bright colors, basically. Anyways, you could do a great Big Little Lies themed party is what I'm trying to say. And I'm sure some of you have, let us know. But that was a lot of build up to say that I did nothing. I just, like, watched with a glass of white wine. And it was great. Actually, I'm really happy almost that I watched it by myself because there wasn't, like, the distractions. You know, when you're watching a show with a bunch of people, sometimes you can miss lines. And I like to go back sometimes to relook at, like, a great Reese Witherspoon reaction shot or, like, if I miss, like,
a more
darn piece
of
dialogue. Yeah, so I feel like it was actually kind of fine that I was watching it antisocially. You actually got to watch it before any of, you know, like, most of America, huh?
Right. I watched the screener last week, and I had a really, like, existential questioning moment because I thought it was such a fantastic episode. I was kind of mad at myself for being so snarky and, like, cynical about the series before. But even though I thought the episode was incredible, I have a lot of logistical questions.
I wouldn't count on anything less from you. So the majority of the finale takes place at quote-unquote trivia night, which is, like, this fundraiser that looked, like, bigger in scale than the Golden Globes. But it was Audrey Hepburn and Elvis themed, which was, like, an amazing opportunity to have every main character just dress up in, like, an Audrey Hepburn costume, basically. And then this is where, like, the murder takes place. It's sort of like the final set piece for the entire series.
Right. Spoiler alert if you've not read it or not watched the episode yet.
I know. I feel so bad whenever people have been tweeting at us stuff like, I can't listen to the first half of your podcast. This is the last week of this, you guys.
Right. But that's on you because you should have made time. This was a priority.
Yeah, good point. Why am I being so accommodating?
It was like this forest wonderland they had set up for this. Was it a PTA fundraiser? Like, the most lavish.
Yeah, event. There's never been a fundraiser like this. I feel like high profile private schools have to reassess their whole, I feel like they're going to have to like up their games now.
I mean, just like the tiki torches, it was like, that was stressing me out because it was such a fire hazard. They were like in the forest. They built this incredible dance floor complete with chandelier outdoors.
Yeah, it was kind of insane. There's also just like so many things happening there. Do you know what I mean?
Also, it's like they can't get it together to fix that railing at the top of the stairs, but they can throw like the most lavish fundraiser. I think the second season should be about whoever pulled this off, the event organizer.
My brother had a good point, though, of the foreshadowing. Like, you know how Reese always had so much trouble with that staircase? Like, she would always rip off that yellow tape and never, you know, be like, you should always scowl and then make her way up. And that's where Alexander Skarsgård met his demise. Oh. Or I should say Perry, not Alexander Skarsgård. I keep doing that with this show, like conflating the actor names. I think we're all doing that, though.
Well, because it's too many actors.
Yeah, so you have to kind of just use their real life names. What did you make, though, and I'm just going full into spoilering territory. At this point, everyone was watched. So were you surprised that Bonnie was so involved in the murder? Bonnie, played by Zoe Kravitz. So we kind of have, we've known all along Alexander Skarsgård's Perry, who's been abusing Nicole Kidman's Celeste, has been this kind of horrific figure, but kind of has this other side to him that sort of can be sweet. So it's very complicated. Turns out he's also the rapist of Shailene Woodley's Jane. So he's just like really bad guy. So we kind of knew he was going to die.
As if he wasn't bad enough that he was like abusing the human goddess that is like Nicole Kidman. They really layered a lot of additional crimes against humanity in those like That's final true. 5 minutes.
I'm surprised they didn't also have him like steal Reese's handbag or something just as like a final affront.
And do note that he's dressed as Elvis in like the full leather getup, like with really exaggerated sideburns and like the crazy Elvis sunglasses.
The craziest look. Like he just looked wild. But then I was just surprised. I thought Nicole's character was going to be the one that did it.
Right.
That killed him.
So, like, Nicole Kidman, Reese Witherspoon, Laura Dern, and Shailene are all kind of having this, like, heated confrontation at the top of these steps. Alexander Skarsgård, I guess, is just, like, out of control at this point.
Yeah, right.
Because he found out that Nicole Kidman bought,
was
like,
leaving him.
The most amazing, like, physical spousal abuse hideaway right on the beach. Really fantastic. She already stocked it with smart water, as Josh pointed out. So he was just unhinged. So he tears down to this like group of women all dressed in their Audrey Hepburn vest.
Yeah.
And Zoe Kravitz, who until this point has worn like a kimono in every single scene, has been lighting incense, like carefully like fusing handcrafted jewelry together, has wind chimes in her backyard, looks like she lives in a yoga studio.
Yeah, completely.
It's her who goes crazy in an act of like self-defense, or I guess Nicole Kidman defense, tears down when she sees Perry start to get abusive and just pushes him off the stairs, which to be fair, like even you are not a violent person, but if you saw someone like diss Nicole Kidman, you would have done the same thing.
I would do it if someone just said like, they called her like, you know, Naomi instead of Nicole. But I also feel like it worked almost though in a weird way. Like Bonnie kind of was catching on to what was happening earlier. Like, you know, she got that glimpse of Alexander Skarsgård throwing punches or something. Like, I feel like she saw what was happening. And then in my head, I was like, come on, Bonnie, like, go, like, do it, you know? So right. I was getting kind of excited. And she hadn't had much to do all season, as you just mentioned. You know, and then she kind of had this amazing, triumphant, heroic moment.
I would have rather it have been transition lenses.
He had a really like ignoble end to the series. Like when the way where he stormed into the coffee shop.
He might be my least favorite character, like under Perry, Alexander Skarsgård. Like even worse than him.
But also, okay, wait, but then you read the book. Because apparently in the book, you learn more about Bonnie's backstory.
Right. It was one of those books I read and I immediately forgot that I read it. But I went back and read the post.
Let's put that on the book jacket when they republish it.
Pull quote that.
I know, pull quote that. But I actually sort of felt like it was okay. We didn't really understand the full backstory. I don't know.
Well, because it was so beautifully filmed. I didn't need logic.
Yeah, I didn't need more like, you know, exposition. Like just push him over the balcony. Like I don't need to know more than that.
Get him out of here.
I was waiting for, I don't know if you felt the same way, they're really building up. So Reese Witherspoon's character had this affair, and we kind of had gotten information that, you know, the guy's wife was on to them, and like, and you felt like maybe Adam Scott was figuring it out. And then it didn't really like end. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like I was sort of expecting there was going to be some like dramatic fight or reconciliation. I don't know. I didn't know what was going to happen, but they don't really resolve that.
I feel like the director maybe lost interest, and so did I. So I thankfully, I was very happy that they didn't burn any more time on that
plot.
I hope Reese divorces Adam Scott.
One of my favorite things, I was reading a lot of different stuff after the premiere, including your interview, which we have to talk about in a second. But the director of the whole series, in like three separate interviews, made a point of like throwing shade at Adam Scott's singing abilities, because Zoe Kravitz actually sang her song in the finale. Like, that was her right. voice. But Adam Scott apparently trained, like took singing lessons so that he might be able to sing it. And then when he got there for like the filming of the finale, they weren't having it, and they redubbed it with some other singer. So that like wasn't his singing voice. I just thought it was so funny that in every interview he was like, yeah, Adam Scott's singing is horrific. Like, I forget how he said it, but he really just like railed on his singing in every of his post-finale interviews.
I thought it was kind of interesting that they dubbed his voice and with some...
It sounded nothing like him to me.
Right, right. Yeah. It was like, it took me out of it. Like, there's no yeah. way that voice is coming out of that guy's body.
I did have that momentary thing of like, oh my God, like, it's kind of sexy if that is his voice. I was like thinking maybe it was for a second.
No, I was just shaking my head. Like Darby would have been Reese Witherspoon's daughter. What's her, the daughter's name?
Chloe, yeah. But the actress's name is Darby.
Oh, which if you have not read, Vulture had this amazing, they interviewed Darby, and it was fantastic.
It's one of the best interviews I've ever read.
I was hanging on every word.
I mean, the kids were great in general. I thought Ziggy was amazing. I thought she was amazing.
Oh my gosh, and Ziggy apparently has a side hustle on YouTube reviewing Broadway plays.
I didn't know that. Wait, that's incredible. Yeah. He goes to see them, and then he just like talks about it. We should have him on the podcast.
In my dreams. But what did you think of the final scene, though, that shows all the women bonded in this manslaughter-induced sisterhood?
So like the end of the show is basically Enya music video, sort of. Like, they're just all on the beach, super happy.
Wearing great flowy clothing.
They've all been at each other's throats, like, literally and figuratively, all season long, and now they're just all best friends. I mean, the kids are all intermingling, and, like, I'm thinking, like, you know, Nicole's son is the one who bullied Laura Dern's daughter, and they're all just hanging out, like, no big deal.
Right, they glossed right over that.
Yeah, so, like, they're all just getting along famously. And at first, I was a little bit... I don't know. I guess I was obviously like, it was a very cathartic kind of, how could you not just like feel good watching that ending? But on some level, I was a little bit like, I don't know. It felt a little soft or safe. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wanted high drama till the end, maybe, but I guess you needed that catharsis at the end.
Right.
But then you do see that this like detective who's skeptical of their story, because they've all been kind of covering for Zoe Kravitz, she's watching them through her like binoculars or whatever. And then I was like, okay, maybe they're trying to give this sense that still things maybe aren't exactly what we think they are. I was reading this Slate piece about it, and like, it made me think about, there's almost something like maybe interesting that like, we don't really hear their testimony at the end. We don't hear them on the beach. So we're just seeing what the townspeople are seeing, and we don't actually know. We've been like removed from the inside.
But what are they going to do? Throw Nicole Kidman in like Monterey's jail, which I'm sure is
like nicer than our apartments. Yeah. Like,
right.
Yeah. No, I know, but it was a great ending. I have no complaints. It just was like...
It sounded like you had a few complaints.
What did you think of it, the ending?
I loved it. Yeah. I didn't think a lot about it, but I think that's kind of why I loved it. I read a couple interviews with the director who said that the ocean was meant to represent the strength all the women had when they banded together.
Would you be excited if they said there was going to be a second season? And this is a good transition into your interview, because because I thought so Julie interviewed Laura Dern while Laura Dern, well, you set the scene of this interview because it's such a fun like situation.
So I interviewed Laura Dern, who was on vacation. So props to her for like even turning on her cell phone. That was really great. But she happened to be on vacation with Reese Witherspoon. And she kept like postponing the interview a couple hours because they were trying to do some like Instagram live. I was bracing for the interview to be canceled because she's on vacation and she's with Reese Witherspoon in some like gorgeous locale drinking wine.
Tropical, yeah.
Right. Why did she need to call me? But she finally calls. She apologizes profusely. She says that they had like an incident getting all the kids off the boat, which I was like, oh, of course, as though I've also had the same trouble.
You've also made Reese Witherspoon wait while you wait for your kid to like get off a boat because he's crying.
But she said, so I'm actually talking to you. I'm on a golf cart with Reese right now.
I would freak out if I heard the person I was interviewing was currently sitting next to Reese Witherspoon.
So I was like fanning myself. I didn't know what to think. But she was really sweet because they were also on the golf cart with their friend Chad, who hadn't seen the finale. No idea who Chad is. I feel like Chad is all of us in this moment. And Laura Dern was so sweet because she did not want to spoil the episode for Chad. So she kept saying, like, if you have to ask me a specific question about the ending, I need to hop, like, stop the golf cart, get off, and walk away so Chad doesn't hear me. So at one point in the interview, I said, Laura, I need to ask you about the ending. Can you get to a place so Chad can't hear you? So she paused. She told him to stop the golf cart. She answered some questions, and then she was like, okay, I'm getting back on the golf cart. Chad's here, so we can't say anything. I was asking about prepping for the fight scene, and she said, no, we actually didn't do that much prep. Reese, like, did we prep that much? And so Reese leans into the phone, and it's my greatest regret in life that I couldn't hear better, because they're like whipping wherever they are going on this golf cart. And by the way, this was like a 20 minute golf cart ride.
Like, so where are they taking Reese and Laura?
They were just like circling the entire island or something, I guess. But she kind of leaned in and I could catch a few words. She said something about how the director was great because he let them just drink wine and go over their lines and just trusted them.
And my favorite part of the interview probably was that you say Reese said that and then Laura Dern goes, that was Reese. Like, as if like, there as was if any I... question of like who else it could possibly be. Like, she just chimes in to be like, FYI, that was Reese Witherspoon.
Like, and I freaked out. I was like, oh my God, tell Reese I said thank you. Like, as if it was the greatest gift that she had leaned into the phone to say four words. But I mean, shout out to Chad if he's listening.
Okay, so I'm reading this. I'm like, Chad, that sounds so familiar. And then I'm connecting that. So all weekend, Reese has been promoting the show on her Instagram. And like, she's doing all these Instagram stories, and like, she did an Instagram live with Laura Dern, as you mentioned, but then she, this weekend from her vacation, she's been just kind of like randomly filming stuff. And this guy, Chad, has been in like all these videos. I like looked up his Instagram because I was kind of like, just who is this guy? And he keeps making jokes, like corny jokes about her movie titles. Like, he's like, what happened? Like what happened if you, you know, you shoplifted, Reese, like, she's legally blonde. I don't know, like, stuff like that. Like, that was a horrible example. But, like, where the punchline is, like, cruel intentions or legally blonde.
Oh, Josh, you would be perfect for that job.
I know, whatever that job is, which is, like, Reese's hype man or something. Like, her joke teller, her, like, you know, like, wine drinking opener. Like, I'll do anything Reese wants
me to do. Golf cart driver, yeah.
I want, like, a reality show where I compete with Chad for Reese's affection. Like, just as her, like, go-to guy.
Oh my gosh, what would that be called?
Something with Witherspoon. Like spoon, I don't know. There's something there. What goes with a spoon? Fork? Like, God, this is... That just disqualified me, actually, from the show. So it's over. I'm not getting the job. But, God, I mean, imagine, like, being on vacation with them. I also just think that seems amazing.
Okay, but I have one other question about... In the scene where Nicole Kidman is drinking the smart water... kind of cleaning out her new apartment. Yeah. She has on one glove. Why is she wearing one glove?
Wait, I didn't notice that, really? And what kind of glove are we talking? Like a Louis Vuitton kind of like rich?
No, it almost looks like a surgical glove. Like I was thinking, is she smoking and she doesn't want the like tobacco smell on her fingers?
Maybe she's clean. She's not scrubbing anything, though. Celeste doesn't do
that. Oh, please, no.
Well, my thing about the smart water was I already tweeted this, but like it just was funny to me because it's like such a like Jennifer Aniston connection in my head. Like when I see smart water now, I just think of, I've talked about this before on the podcast, I think of Jennifer Aniston right away. So I was like, it just makes so much sense to me that Big Little Lies would be like a Team Jen show.
Right. She was not drinking Miraval Rosé in that yeah. scene, but she could have been.
Yeah, she could have been, but that was their sly way of being like, we're Team Jen here, I think. That's my big like conspiracy theory about Big Little Lies.
Well, so from one gorgeous Oscar winner to the next.
Ooh,
right? I want to hear about you. Where did you run into Anne Hathaway?
Okay, so run into it is like, I didn't know necessarily. You never know at these premieres. You know what they're like. I went to the premiere on last Tuesday for this movie called Colossal, which if you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out. It is a monster movie meets like an indie dramedy with like a feminist sort of like allegory at the same time, which Anne explained to me later for a little bit of foreshadowing.
Oh.
But I would not have necessarily picked up on all the allegorical elements watching it myself, probably.
Oh my, of course that's the conversation you have with Anne Hathaway.
So there was a premiere at Lincoln Square. Her co-star is Jason Sudeikis. I've never been clear on how you pronounce that. Sudeikis. Olivia Wilde's partner, and also Tim Blake Nelson. It's kind of a fun cast. Dan Stevens from Downton Abbey's in it.
Oh, Matthew Crawley.
Yeah, he wasn't at the premiere, though, sadly. He's also in Beauty and the Beast now, so maybe he's, you know, rolling in piles of money somewhere. But basically, this premiere happens. From the get-go, Anne was, like, giving you exactly what you wanted. The director got up in front of everybody to introduce the film before they started the screening and then asked Anne and Jason to come up to, like, say hello. Jason just did, like, a self-deprecating joke. He was in, like, a newsboy cap. And then Anne, like, takes the mic from the director and she's, like launches into this whole speech about, like, how meaningful the experience of filming the movie was and how, like, it's going to change everyone in the audience's life to see it. I'm like, oh, this is so exactly what I want from Anne Hathaway, like, a very earnest introduction into this film before it starts, just, like, getting me extremely excited. And then I would think it's crazy. I mean, I don't know. Is this always the case when you've been to premieres? Like, I always just think it's interesting when the stars watch the movie.
Right. Because sometimes they've seen the movie so many times
that they
leave when the screening starts.
But I had a feeling Anne wasn't the type to do that. So
was she there with anyone? Was she there with family?
No husband, no one. Olivia Wilde was not in attendance either. But they were sitting like row in front of me, actually. So like Anne was in the row in front of me, then Jason was one row in front of her.
Jason had a better seat than Anne did?
Well, I guess you could say that, though I always think the further back you are in a theater, it's kind of the better off you are. So maybe I had the best seat of all, right behind Ms. Hathaway. The film was great. And like, as I said before, it's such a mixture of different tonal elements. It's like kind of a strange movie, but people got really into it about like halfway through. Like everyone was just so invested and it's like kind of scary. And then like people were actually audibly cheering at certain points.
Was Anne cheering for herself?
I couldn't see at that point. Unfortunately, like I was all the way on the left, she was all the way on the right, but believe you know me, I was trying to get glances. So then it ended and like stood outside kind of like receiving line style. People came over to like pay their respects. And then I kind of stayed away because I know how stressful that is for them. And then,
was this the party? Because usually everybody moves to an after party, or was this still in
the
screening
room?
Yeah, so
this is still in the Lincoln Center AMC theater. So then after that, everyone did move to the party, which was maybe like two blocks away. Anne obviously got driven, though, the two blocks. Oh. And we arrived at the perfect time. I was with Alyssa Reeder, former colleague and friend
of the podcast.
And like as we arrived at the after party location, Anne was getting out of her car. And she was great. I thought like people were like just civilians, not like me, like mere civilians, were getting up close to her to take selfies and like kind of accost her. It's like always so aggressive. People were really like on top of her. And she was so kind of cool about it. Like she just took selfie after selfie, really sweet. And then she gets in, immediately goes to the back. It was a very chill after party. It was just this like restaurant.
Were you wearing your tux?
No, I think I was wearing a blazer, but no tie.
I always like the visual.
Yeah. Anne was wearing a kind of very interesting, there was all these pictures of her in that black dress. Did you see it? Where this like thing almost in front of her face.
Right.
But she changed out of that. So she was wearing like a red dress to the after party. She was just like having a ball. She was hanging out with her friends. And then like, at a certain point, Alyssa and I look up and we're like standing right near her and she was talking to this. This is usually my like move in these kind of scenarios.
Oh my gosh, your move.
She was talking to a guy and like, you could just see this guy was weird. He just was like not leaving her alone a little. So I feel like we kind of swooped in at the perfect moment where she was looking for an escape kind of. And she was lovely. We talked to her for like 5 or 10 minutes. She asked what we thought of the film. And when I told her I really enjoyed the ending, she like clutched my arms. Like she just reached out and like held me and kind of like shook me. And I was like, oh my God, I feel like I'm literally going to turn into porcelain. Like that was like too much. Like what can't I conquer after having Anne Hathaway clutch me? But she was telling us about how the movie to her was like an allegory for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, or like it turned into that. Like it wasn't intentionally at the beginning, but she's seen the pre-election and post-election, and post-election she said people clap earlier. I don't want to give anything away, but people clap earlier on in the movie now, and she thinks it has to do with the fact that Hillary won the election. Right. Hillary lost the election. Whoops, we're living in alternate reality in the podcast. Hillary Clinton's president and Anne Hathaway is prime minister. And so we talked about that. She was 5 months pregnant while filming the movie. And then Alyssa pointed out like, oh, I never would have been, I wouldn't have been able to tell either. And like, I guess it kind of is, she's wearing lots of baggy clothes and she's kind of playing like a hot mess who's like an alcoholic in the movie.
She's not wearing a cat suit.
Right. But she was like, well, you can see it in my ass. And I loved that. What else did she say that was interesting? Oh, we talked about what she really liked about watch. Because I asked if she's what I said earlier, like, I'm like, do you like watching yourself or is it hard to watch? And she said, no, she likes watching this one because she knows she was 5 months pregnant with her son. So when she's watching it, she can kind of like see her son on screen. Like, in her stomach, I guess.
Sure, like I'll take it. Oh my gosh. I feel like that was almost kind of a relatable conversation you had with her.
Oh no, she was so, we left feeling like so high in Anne Hathaway. Oh, we did make fools of ourselves though, and I'll share this too. In our defense, it was a little hard to hear because it was like a lot of people around, and you could see at this point people were waiting to talk to her. And she said, when we were talking about how her character was this like hot mess and drinking so much and kind of all over the place, she's like, oh, I was actually basing it. And she's like, and I can say this to you guys, like on Catherine. And then we couldn't really quite hear the last name. It started with an M. And it was, she's like, you know, the French writer. And like, I'm like, I really don't want to let Anne Hathaway down. Like, I have no idea who she's talking about. And like, the fact that she just assumed Alyssa and I would know is like such an honor. And then she's like, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? And we both kind of nod our heads. We're like, yeah, of course, Anne. Like, we know exactly. She's like, oh, great. She's like, I'm so happy that like, I have people here who know who that is or something. And then she keeps on going. And then afterwards, Alyssa and I walk away and like turn to Alyssa. And I'm like, Catherine, who? She's like, I have no idea. I'm like, me either. So we basically lied to Anne Hathaway because we didn't know who she was talking about.
But you had to. She was so happy that you guys knew.
She was so happy that she thought we knew who this Parisian writer who she had based her character on was. And then I tried Googling to figure it out. It wasn't to be. It wasn't my finest moment. Feeling semi-duplicitous in the presence of one of my favorite actresses.
Well, no, I think you played it perfectly.
She was really, really lovely. I was already extremely pro Anne Hathaway, and then I left feeling even more so.
Oh, what a dream she sounds like.
She was great. Oh. Okay, so moving from Anne to someone who... God, I was going to say look sort of like Anne, Kate Middleton.
From one Princess Diaries?
Oh my God, right, Princess Diaries. That's so good, Julie.
I've never heard that, oh my God, from you.
From a fictional princess to a real life princess.
Oh, I need to take off my sweater. I'm very hot, sorry.
Wow, that transition has her so heated up that she's taking off the sweater.
I know, I'm so excited. I have to take off the sweater, put my tiara on. Okay, I'm ready.
So, Julie, Kate Middleton. So, actually, this came up with Allison Williams last week.
And she correctly predicted it. Last week when we were talking to Allison Williams, you should check out that episode if you haven't yet. We were talking about Williams' kind of ski scandal, which is that he skipped a royal engagement to go skiing with his buddies, right?
Yeah, so just a quick reminder, we talked about this, I think, 2 weeks ago, was it now? But there was, like, a very kind of important event that the Queen is sort of, like, oversees that all the important royals are expected to go to. William
didn't
go.
Important enough that all of them are expected to go to, but not important enough that we would remember what the actual event is.
I was not invited. If they want me to remember it, they better invite me next year. So then William went skiing instead, and like probably would have been not that big of a deal if he hadn't been filmed by someone at the club, and he was doing these kind of like dad style dance moves, getting down in the club. TMZ posted them. He also like cavorted with this model and like high-fived her, which wasn't that scandalous, but the whole combination of like the dancing and the model and missing the event created this whole kind of tsunami of scandal.
And Allison Williams very kindly told us that we were making way too big of a deal out of it. Mm-hmm. It was not a scandal. And in fact, Kate was probably at some more exclusive dance club, but she was probably smart enough to make sure there were no camera phones there.
It's actually crazy how well Allison Williams predicted how this all played out now that I think about it. She must actually be friends with Kate Middleton.
I know.
We have to follow up with Allison to find out how she knew this.
Right. She said, of course, like Kate is the chillest person any of us would know. And then Josh, you reported on this on Vanity Fair.
Okay, so then what was uncovered over the weekend, and I guess we should caveat this, that like it's from The Sun was the source, but like everyone else is sort of hopping on it now. So it's probably true, which was that the same weekend that William went for this debaucherous ski trip, Kate was at Pippa's bachelorette weekend. So Pippa Middleton, Kate's sister, she's getting married next month, and Pippa's apparently had this like very sort of like chic, it's like somewhere in France they had it. It was 100 miles from where William was, and they all shared a plane, like both parties. The Pippa bachelorette party and the William bro party all got on this private jet together or something that the Middletons paid for.
Oh.
So it like wasn't a royal expense. And then I guess the William crew went to Switzerland. The Pippa Kate crew went to France. And then they had their bachelorette weekend. So while, you know, everyone thought Kate was at home, like checking her Instagram to see like what pictures of William might be showing up.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or like waiting for texts and like watching George and Charlotte. In fact, she was at an equally, if not actually not even equally, like a more exciting event, I think, which was Pippa's bachelorette. So this is from the Sun report. It says they stayed in a really exclusive catered chalet with maids and chef who ensured they were totally spoiled. The owners wanted to impress their royal guests, so the girls were showered with gifts. They were given Swatch watches, UGG slippers, leather-bound notebooks, and bespoke fragrances. Ah. This is what my bachelor party is going to be like, too. It was a very small, private party, and they had an amazing time.
Well, if we were renting out our ski chalet in the south of France to the Middletons, we would have done the same, except we couldn't afford all those gifts, so we would have just offered them the shoes off our feet.
I know, exactly. We would have given them more than this. We'd be like, I don't even know what we would have done. So does this now change your whole viewing of the William incident? Are you now like reframing this whole thing in your head, knowing this information, or does it not change anything to you?
It definitely, well, the Allison Williams thing changed it for me because I felt a little bit shamed, like maybe we pay a little too much attention. So that was the first thing. But I love hearing this because I want to know more about Kate's interior life.
And it's kind of interesting that the narrative that immediately got from, we were the ones like propagating this, but just the idea that like Kate was somehow so disappointed, so upset, you know, it just is funny. This is making it seem like she's the chillest person any of us know. Like she really probably didn't care. She was having way more fun. You know, she probably wasn't even thinking twice about what William was up to. She's like, what lame stuff are they up to in Switzerland right now? Who even cares?
Right. And she kind of pulled off this covert weekend getaway. Well, William did not.
I think the biggest takeaway is these royals have to be wary of the covert cell phone video.
You would think that they would already be wary, right? Or their security.
I read a separate report. And I don't remember. It might have been Daily Mail. Like before this came out, that William was furious because I guess the place they all went skiing and Switzerland is known to be like a hot spot for royals, which by the way, what a reputation to have, the place the royals come to like get loose. But he was really upset because apparently part of the whole deal with this ski town or whatever is that they're like really discreet. No videos get out and like nothing happens.
Oh. Ooh.
Alana chiming in, as she always does, with a great conspiracy theory that kind of makes us reassess the whole situation. So Alana just said that she thought maybe the video got out intentionally so that no one would catch on to the fact that Pippa and Kate were having this bachelorette weekend.
My alternate theory is that Pippa or Kate phoned it in to like TMZ. William's whereabouts, and they just let him take the hit without telling him.
Oh, so a wrinkle on Alana's theory. I like that. Pippa was like wanting to make sure hers was going to be
right,
extremely classified. I wonder why now the Kate Pippa news is coming out.
Right. Well, maybe it's that chalet owner.
Or maybe it's like an UGG or Swatch PR person, because I thought I thought it was kind of weird that in this write-up it says they were given Swatch watches and UGG slippers. Like, you don't usually see like brand names in these like royal kind of reports.
Very good point.
Okay, so which weekend would you rather have been part of? This is such an easy question, but I'm asking you anyway.
I mean, of course, the UGG weekend, the comfy weekend. What about you?
Yeah, obviously. I can't even believe I like pose that as like there could even be anyone who would say William's bro high-fiving weekend. I mean, I'm sure William's weekend was interesting to behold.
Right. No, it definitely was.
I feel like I also am curious just what else went on at this Middleton bachelorette weekend. Because I feel like if you're Kate and Pippa, you can share all secrets with each other. They're both part of this kind of unique, rare life situation. But like, can Pippa's girlfriends from college know all about that stuff?
Right. I didn't realize either that the Middletons had private jet money.
Well, I guess Kate Middleton's mom, I think we've talked about this before, is basically like the Kris Jenner of the British aristocracy. She has this party planning business, but she's like risen to have these two daughters.
What does their brother do, James?
James is a marshmallow tycoon. he makes these personalized, this isn't a joke, he makes these personalized marshmallows that you can like rent for different parties and occasions.
Rent? like commission. We need to get some commission of these marshmallows. I wonder if they're any good.
We should make him the limelight marshmallows. I'm looking at Alana to like get approval on that. I think we should make, and we're getting the thumbs up. I don't know, we'll do some sort of giveaway.
Yeah, I'm going to London next week.
Oh my gosh, you have to do some on-the-ground research.
I'm going to do some on-the-ground reporting.
Can you find Meghan Markle's Whole Foods? I think that has to be your number one thing.
I have a whole checklist. I have to find that hashtag on the sidewalk.
Oh my God. I just lost it thinking about that. And you can't give me any warning. You just have to send me that picture without telling me it's coming.
Okay.
I need that booth next week. I can already tell I'm going to
get a Whole Foods bag, and I'm going to have someone take a picture of me outside of like Kensington Palace.
Yes.
I'm going to try to find a marshmallow to bring back for you. I don't know if they sell them at stores.
And also like Pippa wedding related research too.
Do they have a date yet?
Yeah, it's May.
Do you think they're going to sell the photos to a magazine?
Yeah, I feel like they might do like an official palace. But she's not like a royal. It's kind of confusing.
She's royal adjacent.
And I feel like, I sometimes feel like with those kind of celebrity where it's like, I don't know, they're not actors or actresses. Like, I feel like she might just post it to kind of like get it out there so that people don't hound their wedding.
Right. I'm very excited.
You're smiling in a way that makes me feel like you have some sinister thought about this, which I bet you do. Okay. Well, if you're in London, meet Julie at the No Bad Energy hashtag sign, where she'll be spending the entire week just camped out by Meghan Markle's No Bad Energy hashtag. You do have to find it, though. That's like a rule.
I will find it. If anyone has any tips, please tweet us.
Yeah, let us know. That does it for this week's In the Limelight. Thank you so much for listening. Please remember to rate, review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Let us know where Julie should go in London next week.
Right. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter @InTheLimelight to further discuss any of these subjects. You can also follow us individually. I'm @JulieWMiller.
And I'm Jay Duboff. And now we also have an Instagram account, or we always have for a bit now, In the Limelight Pod. This episode was edited and produced by conspiracy theorist extraordinaire Alana Milner. Thanks to Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers at Panoply. Thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you next week. And until then, no bad energy.